Listening to KKUP Cupertino. I'm Larry Grant, and today on Reality Check, very honored and excited to have as a guest the Mae Brussel, well known to listeners of the station, a pioneer in the field of political research. And a quite an example to all of us in this field. Our guests are still wandering around, so maybe I'll go to another song. You ready to? We're accompanied today by John Lytle, who will be aiding in the interviewing. And Tom Davis is here, and he's going to be... recommending some books which are available at his mail order bookstore. Do you actually have a physical bookstore anywhere, Tom?
Excuse me. I can get the mic up here. No, I only sell by mail order, and I have sold by mail order since 1975. I've sold books since 1970.
Let me just make sure here. We're going to get into a marathon with Tom and May that will, I think, be quite memorable. We want to make sure this is recorded. We have a tape space at the bottom. We're going to be this time for this very special program, and we are privileged to have, as many of you regular listeners know, these sterling individuals here. We're going to give May a chance to shine thoroughly. We are I've got some good quality tapes that we're going to put on. We may be getting surprise guests. I even called the Vatican this morning, but in the wee hours.
He's
but
not there.
Paul Marcinkus is not there, right? Although the bishops are gathering, but a lot of funny commentary. We might, in fact, get a call from Fritz Kramer, according to his sister.
Oh, really?
That's one big news. His sister was in town, and she didn't know enough to clam up for a little bit. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. And talk to a few others in Washington yesterday.
Maybe Washington's filled with his relatives. That's worse.
That's worse. Spend and the rest. Maybe Frank Carlucci. We don't know, but we should get some interesting calls as well.
Carlucci's in San Francisco for the Trilateral. He can't be here.
The Trilateral Commission.
Called the Fairmont Hotel.
Interesting connections.
Okay. For sure.
Okay, well, I'll turn the mic over. We just want to encourage people to get the tape recorders going. And there's so much that May has to share. As I say, this is really Mae Brussel's hour, and Tom Davis, he's been a stalwart backing up everybody for so long, but we're going to try to show the many facets of May that many haven't seen. A wonderful woman who does more than just bring out the truth, and there's room for humor and everything else. We will be inviting phone calls on a sophisticated basis in particular. We're going to be somewhat draconian about cutting off phone calls that don't really get to the meat of issues, but we certainly welcome all calls that are either substantial or that shed light in whatever sense. It's kind of light on the whole truth as well as reality check in this hour on the subjects that May has been shedding light on for so long that could put it in a new perspective. So with that, I'll turn the mic over.
Before we start asking questions, we're going to ask our own questions. So if you have any questions for May or Tom, hold off for maybe an hour or two while we set up a background.
Let's say 11 a.m. we might open up to some and then ask some more questions.
Oh, well, it's going to take a little while to answer our questions first. But
yeah, we'll get it there. Okay.
But at some point, we will be opening the phone lines, of course. And really glad to have you here, May. A lot of people listen to your tapes every week, and they don't have a chance to ask you direct questions. So this is a really great opportunity. I know there's probably listeners that aren't familiar with you and your work. Could you tell us something about your background and how'd you get into the research that you do?
Oh, they all know that, don't they? Don't they all know that story? It's so tiresome. In two sentences, John Kennedy was killed, and the second sentence is, I wanted to find out who did it. That's what started the research. It goes back to 1963.
Okay. I think you're right. Our listeners have heard that story
They've heard that
quite
story.
A few times.
Yeah, Tom's brought a list of covers from current books that he has, and opening up the Kennedy assassination brought me to all of these books that began to flow out afterwards. I don't think there ever was a time that people examined their country as there was after Kennedy was killed. That mushroomed. Don't you think that mushroomed the whole business of private investigators going in for themselves instead of leaving it to the official government account?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the first case where anybody has really put the time, the effort, and the hours, and the days, and the years, I might say, like you have, me, on any particular case. To my knowledge, there's nothing like it, probably since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
I mean, with the exception of, say, someone like George Seldes, who caught on very early, and nobody told me about his works for years. How many books were there exploratory about government secrets up until November 1963?
Just very few. I can't off the top of my head think of any books.
Sayers and Kahn.
With the exception, I was going to say a few people like that. George Seldes, Sayers and Kahn.
And Martin.
And Fred Cook.
Who wrote All Honorable Men, a few.
Yeah, and just a few. Now, these people really had a handle on what was going on in the world, but they were just like voices in the wilderness.
And they were separated from each other, as against us now.
Probably.
Yeah.
And they were scattered across the country, that's true.
Uh-huh.
Sayers and Kahn were out here. They did get some currency in a few magazines. The Nation has always been a stalwart. George Seldes had his own magazine that you have, don't you? In fact.
But collecting the old books, there certainly was nothing like what happened after Kennedy was killed. That began, really, I don't trust my government who did it, and people like myself, just housewives raising kids, began investigating, and books came out, and researchers from everywhere.
Yeah, there were during and after World War II, and you have to remember that Franklin Roosevelt was president, and people really trusted the people in the government, and with good reason compared to now. It's just plain today, and since particularly Nixon being in, then Ford, and then Reagan, it's just god-awful compared to Roosevelt.
Yeah, during the Alger Hiss days, nobody trusted really the pumpkin films, the papers, and the Rosenberg case had a lot of questions, but there weren't private people mushrooming books or questions at that time until Kennedy was killed, and then Nixon lost to him, in effect, had evened things out. And then books came back later about that period, but at that time there weren't that many.
And it was a different perspective because, John, you...
Well, that's okay. I was going to just try to get that perspective in, Tom, because what you're both saying is that we had the Whitaker Chambers, a lot of weird and undesirable characters, McCarthy and whatever, and a lot of skullduggery per se, but what we're really talking about since the assassination, or at the time of the assassination of Kennedy, was an effective coup.
Yeah.
And that's something we might talk about, because it really was a dramatic shift in the course of this country.
But the interest, when I want to know who killed him, I never thought in my life that I'd be doing 17 years of radio work. And Tom, did you ever dream that you'd have this many kind of books about the government, questioning agencies of the government and people involved?
No, I had no idea. And we've known each other ever since this mushroom, the book title is the number that we carry. We just started with a few with the Kennedy assassination. I like to tell the story about when my first store, at that time I had a retail store, and I put up a very few of the early Kennedy books. There was Popkin's book on Oswald, and the Jostens were so scarce that I didn't even have that one, but I did have Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment.
How about Buchanan's book, The Kennedy
Buchanan's
Conspiracy?
Buchanan's book, Who Killed Kennedy.
Yeah, Who Killed Kennedy.
And just
Kennedy.
A few.
Savage.
And Penn Jones's first book,
mm-hmm.
Forgive My Grief, #1. And this was even before the Josiah Thompson book, 6 Seconds in Dallas, came out, or the Sylvia Marr book. Those both came out in late 1967. So there, on the Kennedy assassination, there were probably less than 10 titles.
And now there's about 270.
Right, but the sad thing was, in 1967, I put these up on a wall behind the cash register in my store, and in about 6 months' time, I had two people inquire about those books. And that was the interest. It's just two people in about 6 months inquired, what were those Kennedy books doing up there? And one I remember specifically was a Dell edition of Harold Weisberg's Whitewash One.
Whitewash One, yeah.
Well, my boys went to a private school in Sedona, Arizona. It's called Verde Valley. And so about 1966, I bought them the complete 26 volumes of the Warren Commission hearings for their library and felt, well, this is going to be very important for the students coming through someday, and started buying every book, duplicating my library for the library at this school. And they wondered at the time, you know, what is this about? And now those are limited editions. They only printed 8,000 copies. And then other people, like you, began to collect them, and people began to write books. Penn Jones wasn't an investigative reporter. He was retired military.
Right. And he's just running this small hometown newspaper in Midlothian, Texas.
Nobody ever heard of the place, and he reached people all over the world. He was actually the first person in this or any other case, don't you think, with Forgive My Grief, to recognize the importance of killing primary witnesses right off the bat after the murder, and as subsequent investigations came wiping them out?
He was. He was the first one. He's noted even today for that, even though he's getting really on in years now. But he was noted as the first one that pointed out that various very key witnesses, people had information that was vital and firsthand information in, say, in a court case, like if anywhere one was brought to trial, he was the first one to point that out.
Do you carry Forgive My Grief now? Do you have those four volumes?
No, all four volumes of Forgive My Grief are out of print.
Can't we reprint those someday? I mean, on our own? Could we copy them and just... You sell them. Is there a possibility of putting up money and just making copies and selling them?
It's very expensive to redo just about any, even a paperback book requires initial investment of about $10,000.
Oh, I could use my copying machine and get them out for $100.
Oh, yeah.
What are you talking about?
But you don't, you're a little technicality here, but...
Like the Torbit document?
Reprinting and binding a book, I meant, you know, making a book like the... original copy.
Well, who says you have to bind it? Just
well,
copy
we're not. It? We sell many, many manuscripts, as you say, but you still have to figure about 5.5 cents a page because you don't know.
But those are small books, and they're little jewels. They shouldn't ever be out of print.
No, but we've done a lot of them. We've done the Kennedy Conspiracy. We've done Operation Mind Control. Operation Mind Control costs considerably more just copied.
Well,
than it did, you know, when it was first
course.
Published.
I think we should write to Penn while he's still alive and has his rockers, if he still has them, and see if we can get the permission to duplicate these.
We can do that, yeah.
Okay.
That'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll ask some more personal questions of you later, May, but let's establish a framework of the kind of things that you do and are researching. I saw John Judge Friday speaking up in Berkeley, and he gave sort of a very condensed, he called it a revisionist history, a history of the world since World War One, where he kind of pointed out all the various subterfuge and assassinations and secret deals and so on. How far back does your research go in time? I've never heard you talk too much, let's say, before World War One. I know you've mentioned the Lincoln assassination a few times.
Yeah. Well, I don't dwell on how far back, because I think we're living now and the problems we have are today's problems. And I don't want to get too theoretical. I believe that the rearming of Germany with the approval of the banks and the Congress and all the powers that be, while they told the world that war was the war to end all wars, and then the secret Fry Corps that duplicated the military in Germany that put that government in power was the network for overthrowing this country, as they did in Germany, taking the power into the people's hands like Hitler. So that I go back to the time of the Versailles Treaty, where there were discussions on whether to kill President Wilson at the time or give him a slow lingering poison, which he had. and died, and Mr. House from Texas was running the administration. And there's parallels here between Nancy and Wilson's wife, strong women running, covering up for the president as he's in declining. I try to stick on today's news and how it pertains to the past and not just get hung on the very early period. The Lincoln years were very important because Lincoln was helping build railroads for the Tsar so that they could transport oil and become a major country which competed with Japan and England that were very tiny. And Japan and England invaded Russia in 1905, knocked out the fleet because it had nothing to do with communism. It had to do with world trade. And Sidney Reilly, you carry the Reilly books, don't you? The story of Sidney Reilly, the spy. And I think that's an important concept, is that when we keep wanting to invade Russia, that began with Germany and Japan, England and Japan a long time ago.
Right. I carry two Sidney Reilly books. And Reilly is very important because if you want to understand how international relations really work,
yeah,
and not look at the Secretary of State or the foreign ministers, but look at the espionage network, even back at the turn of the century, then you look at the things that Sidney Reilly did. Now, if anybody was fortunate to watch that series on PBS about Reilly, there's 8 or 9 programs, this is very, 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 very revealing.
And with Zaharoff, the arms merchant, because then Samuel Cummings comes in from him, and Monte Carlo was the basis for the monarchies, if you want to study why they want to get back into power. And the work with Rothschilds, I think Sidney Reilly is very, very important.
He is extremely important because you can learn so much about today, what's happening today, the techniques and the little programs and ruses and whatnot, organizational plans of the Intelligence Committee go right back to Sidney Reilly. And you can see things that Reilly did that they're doing today, they worked then and they work now, and it's incredible.
Also, you have books on British intelligence, and the network that Reilly had becomes, like with William Stevenson, teaching William Donovan and OSS coming and moving to Rockefeller Center. We incorporated the technology of Reilly and the British Empire during and then after the war. So the books you have on William Stevenson, Man Called Trepid, all those, how many of those do you have? Starting with Reilly, British intelligence.
We have two books on Sidney Reilly.
Yeah.
And one is by Robin Bruce Lockhart, which has been in print many years, but is a well-known book about Reilly. And then another is a sort of an autobiography. And then two other books that are current right now are MI6. Now, MI6 is the equivalent British intelligence agency to our operations division of the CIA. In other words, it's the dirty tricks division.
Yeah, the overthrow the and murder.
For British intelligence is MI6. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people are not flashing on that because the book doesn't move too fast. But one which is probably a little bit more all-inclusive is called Her Majesty's Secret Service, and this just came out last year. And it's a very expensive book, unfortunately.
Is that one?
But it's a good book.
Yeah. I'll have to get that from you. I saw it on the list, and I don't have that one. But the roots, like even the ones of Saudi Arabia, British and Saudi Arabia, and their activities with their empire is what we took over, the French and British, after World War II and took those bases. So to study today, you really have to get back geographically to these little two islands like Japan and Britain that were very, very smart and very ambitious, and they needed to conquer to maintain themselves. And so they would knock out their competitors and maintain their empires.
I have a section called Historical Background, the Secret Government, in which we include some of these books. And as far as the Middle East and the oil, I have a section of about the whole oil business, and there is one good book which I don't have anymore called Power Play. Leonard Mosley wrote it, and it's a good background of the oil business, because what happens in the oil business, particularly in the Middle East and there with the Arabs, affects us every minute of our waking lives.
Well, oil is either airplanes or boats or mail delivered or cars. You just can't get anywhere without it, so it's the key kingpin of mobility.
And a little bit more current book is The Control of Oil, which is, I know, is one of your favorite books because the author died just about a month after it was published.
Before he could do the road tour and tell you about it, yeah.
John M. Blair.
Uh-huh.
And it's a terrific book because it tells what really happened in Libya and why Gaddafi is in power today and why we're literally supporting Gaddafi. The conventional wisdom is that Gaddafi is this terrible terrorist, and he's running all these terrorist groups all over the world, and he's doing this, and he's doing that. And there's very little truth to that. I'm not supporting Gaddafi. I'm just telling you that our own government, through its intelligence agencies, in effect, controls Gaddafi.
Well, you have books on that, too. The Death Merchant and the weapons that were sent to the CIA and Defense Department. I have... Just this blurb you have of certain current books that are available that explain the power of building him up so you can knock him down and take his oil also, keep the Mediterranean in the hands of America.
And then you come up a little bit closer and you get into the Death Merchant and the whole story of Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, Gary Korkula, and this whole gang.
And that's the Contragators.
Which is the Contragators.
Albert Hakim and Richard, General Secord. And so, I think the early period, also the Kim Philby books were very important for me once I started to study the assassination of John Kennedy. Kim Philby, the spy. Have you ever read any of those? Have you ever read these books? They're very good.
No, what are they about?
Well, they're about a British spy who was... covering the London Times in Spain at the time of the revolution and realized, you know, what was happening with Franco and the loyalists. And he decided to become a spy for the left and betray the powers that be, the Franco element and the British Empire. So he changed his colors. He was supposed to be neutral, covering the stories for the London Times of the Spanish Civil War. And he became more far right in his writing, and the British were so impressed they promoted him and put him into intelligence. And he had to see his best friends die, you know, and write these terrible things praising Franco. And he stayed and worked his way up to be one of the heads of British intelligence. And then when they discovered a few years later that he was in a prominent position, that he was, in fact, a spy, he fled to the Soviet Union, and he lives there now. But his modus operandi, I read every book on him. There's about three on him and one that his wife wrote, The Spy
Right.
I Married.
Right.
And by really detailing those books, I could understand the Kennedy assassination. In fact, they used the same names for their transfer or their connections, some of the same names. And I picked that up reading the Warren Commission hearings.
Yeah, Kim Philby was originally with a group of young men who went to Cambridge University in England. And which were the two famous Burgess and Maclean who defected. These were all, as far as we know, on the surface, these were supposed to be Russian agents. There's still some question what Philby really is.
There's some question if he's a triple agent.
And he could be a triple agent. We really don't know.
Well,
definitively.
I have a friend that was in the Soviet Union. He visited him for one day. But he didn't say, Kim, what are you?
But, you know, this goes sort of back to Sidney Reilly, because this question about just really what is Kim Philby?
Yeah.
The British government has been always pretty much number one in intelligence.
You think Margaret Thatcher saw him last week?
So the exact relationship of British intelligence over the last 100 years and their spies in Russia, so-called Russian spies infiltrated the British, that whole thing is still a kind of a morass.
Well, see, when Kim wrote in his book, he would tell how spies meet, and he would have a party, say, in Tehran, and the hostess would be Aunt Balia, and the host was Uncle Yuya. And the purpose of the party, like 10 people, was to introduce him to one couple there. Then he never saw the host again, but he would latch on to the guest as a couple. And the spying was done on a basis of visiting aunts and uncles. And when I was spending 9 years cross-filing and retyping the Warren Commission hearings, I found a place where Marina Oswald was taking a vacation at a beach town, and Oswald was writing to her, and they were writing about Aunt Valia and Uncle Yuya, and they were the same names. And when in Dallas-Fort Worth, you know, Bernard Fensterwald of the CIA, Committee to Investigate Assassinations, the CIA attorney who represented McCord, at the time of the Watergate hearings. He was at my home for about 3 days, and he gave me $100 to copy the material of Philby and Maureen and Lee. And I kept his check and never sent it. I didn't cash it. And I thought, well, this is going to be valuable someday. He became McCord's attorney and Mrs. Paisley's attorney. And I never cashed it or sent it because I knew he was, since he was CIA. But I found the same names in Dallas-Fort Worth that Lee and Marina were using, like Uncle Value will bring Mrs. Meller a letter to the Power and Light Company. And those were the same family names that Kim Philby used when he was the top British spy.
So you're saying there's sort of a standard tradecraft,
yeah,
so to speak, of espionage, whether it's Soviet or American or British. Or,
yeah, in this particular case, I'm calling about American and British, and he was detailing how it operates so that, say, if somebody like George de Morenschild goes to a party and takes Lee and Marina to meet a couple like Michael and Ruth Payne, then he can leave and go to Haiti because he never has to see them again in April 63. He could leave because once he makes the connection, then Marina Oswald moves into Payne's house, and she's there the day of the assassination, and they say, oh, go to the garage, that's where the gun was. And here's a negative of Lee at this fence with a picture. In other words, everything incriminating came from the Payne's house. It wouldn't stand up in a court of law, but the introduction's done by a person who can leave the next week and never be seen by them again.
Wasn't the shadow on the negative, by the way, going the wrong direction?
Yeah, it was, yeah. But all that was done, like, just through introduction. So by studying, we were talking about how early back this goes and a lot of books that Tom has. In order to understand the present, you do have to keep up with the past.
Yeah. I heard John Judge the other night speak of something which was new to me about the real James Bond.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, sure, sure. He was a spy for British intelligence, the Fleming. You have, the Torpid document is filled with that. The Fleming family were British intelligence high up, and James Bond, everything that was in the books was true. And during the war, right after the war, the headquarters were set down at Montego Bay in Jamaica, his home. And who was he next to? He lived next door to a top spy. He worked with British intelligence. William Stevenson.
Right, right.
William Stevenson, Intrepid, yeah.
And then they brought in other people, notably John Connolly.
Yeah, he had
the
a
same
home.
Place.
And Albert Osborne was down there, the same man that accompanied Oswald on the bus to Mexico. Before he picks the bus, he's down with Connolly. Do you still have a man called Intrepid?
Yeah, Man Called Intrepid is in print and easy to find.
Very important.
Hardly think about it anymore because it had many hundreds of thousands of copies in paperback printed. It's still in print, and you can find it anywhere.
Not anywhere, as long as you care.
Well, you'll go and find it in the drugstore. Well, yeah. I mean, no, in your barber shop, but you try a used bookstore.
No, but if they get your catalog, what you've kept up with are things that if people got the catalog or ordered them through the years, they were well trained to study an affair like Controgate as it came down.
Well,
this is the operation. As a matter of fact, the MI6 had an office in London. The what is it called? The Keeney Meany office, KMS, Keeney Meany Services, and those initials were on Oliver North's paper that was found in the safe. And that's a safe house in London that sends mercenaries. They were brought home from Tamal because they were doing massacres, and now they were sending trained people down to El Salvador from the Keeney Meanies, of all things. It sounds like a crack or something. But British intelligence is still sending killers down to El Salvador. When they're too cruel in Tamal, they can go to El Salvador.
We just probably can't imagine what these people are all up to. The point of the whole thing is that the intelligence services of the major Western countries are incestuous.
And they breeded morons, too.
And it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
They not only sleep with each other, but they can't get their heads straight anymore.
You know, this Jonathan Pollard Israeli Mossad thing is just a good example, in my opinion. So it's one thing to think about. If you try to categorize and put all the intelligence services into a little niche and say, the CIA works for America, and the KGB works for Russia, and the Mossad works for Israel, and the MI6 and the MI5 and all the other MIs, there's clear up to 9 in British intelligence, that they're all work for their respective countries. This is simply not true. These people make deals with each other, and God knows what's going on.
Well, when you talk about Pollard, you have the best book of all on the research that isn't available in the stores. Pollard's co-worker in the spying was Rafi Tan.
Yeah,
and he not only, he's notorious for bringing Adolf Eichmann, but he worked with Edgar Bronfman, the subject of the whole Permandex book, the Torbett document. He ties right in to, as a matter of fact, I did broadcasts about 6 months ago of him being in San Diego in 1972 and his contacts in Panama that are very important to the Contragate story. But I believe when they planned to kill Nixon in 1972 in San Diego, that he was located right there at the time. So that Rafi Tan's work with Pollard can best be explained by reading this book that you can't get. You should describe this manuscript, the Torbett document, because if listeners want one book on the Kennedy assassination outside of Project Paperclip, I think this is the one.
Well, I was just going to say that people who write today, you can watch your newspaper, just about anyone, any of you listeners, and you can keep up with the Pollard Israeli spy case. That's in the news today, and so you can follow it. Now, as regards the Torbett documents, an interesting document. It was first published...
It was given to me.
in about, not, as far as I can trace back, about